Hey, everyone. You're back with us again. Thank goodness. This is the second episode of The Drum Technique. Today's episode is brought to you by TriCosta.com. TriCosta is a MMA / martial arts apparel brand. Martial arts would be the best way to talk about it. They've been a good supporter of the martial arts community for a good time now. They were always on a grassroots level. They used to make the shirts for one of the largest MMA communities, the underground.com. Now they've branched out. They do all kinds of things. They're world famous for the Korean zombie shirt, of course. So if you want to wear martial arts gear and you don't want to look like a total jerk, they're a great brand to go ahead and support. So go to tricosta.com. It's TRICOASTA. And buy yourself some great apparel. Also, we are brought to you today by the MMA community. They are a brand new board to discuss martial arts, mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu, whatever you're into in a respectful manner. It seems like nowadays everyone wants to be a keyboard warrior, get on the internet, make fun of people. It's not really something that they're wanting to do there. You know, it's a very respectful board. And if you want to be a part of that kind of community, I suggest you go ahead and make your way to the MMAcommunity.com. Thank you. And we'll be right back with Heat on Gracie.
Drum technique.
You ready?
Drum technique.
Hey, everybody. We are here with the crown prince of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, Hedon Gracie. For those of you who do not know who this man is or what his family is or what they represent, back in the day, there was a thing called the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But this came from something that was a real problem with the martial arts community. You know, for years, everyone wondered what would happen if you pitted men from different styles all over the world against each other in combat to see what would happen. There was video games about it. There was movies about it, from Bloodsport to Street Fighter. This man's father actually decided, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to make this thing happen. He made a little tournament in Denver, Colorado, and the UFC was born. And from there, the name Gracie took over. It basically became synonymous with mixed martial arts, with martial arts in general. And now you come from basically the head family of martial arts. This long legacy of hero-like figures. I just want to, what does that feel like?
First of all, hero-like figures. I did see all my uncles and my father and my grandfather as heroes my whole life. And that's what really kept me following their path, not so much as fighting how they fought, but at least sharing the lifestyle and sharing jiu-jitsu the way they did for so many years. So it's important that children look up to their parents, especially if their parents want the children to continue their path. And that happened to me. But it's been great growing up in the Gracie family. And you mentioned the UFC and that being the spark. And actually yesterday, I was at a park yesterday, and this guy said, "Wow, you train with the Gracies," and he saw my shirt. And then I said, "I'm Hedon Gracie," and he went crazy. And of course, that happens every, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. A random person, of course, is blown away, and they're blown away because they saw what Hoist did in UFC 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, all these beginning UFCs. So it's great. I love being part of the family and doing jiu-jitsu all day, every day.
It's amazing. You know, the early stories were, and you just go ahead and correct me at any time if I'm misquoting or misstating a story in any way. But we hear these, you know, the old stories, the old days of when your father and your grandfather, better yet, started to make these transitions to the jiu-jitsu that they were normally taught. And he believed in it so much and it was so effective that they would put ads in newspapers. "Hey, you know, if you want to come test yourself against, you know, our style, we'd be more than willing to do that." And it's crazy because back then, you know, you didn't really know what was out there. You know, you didn't know. I mean, you would hear all these stories about their masters with like secret death touches and whatever. And you didn't know if it was true. And you didn't know if there was some kind of lethal techniques that when you pit you against them would really put you in danger. So for him to have the faith in his, you know, style to be able to do that was quite an, you know, it's impressive.
Well, also he wanted to know. He wanted to know if it was possible to lose and how he could lose. So he was very much a scientist in that. I think more than fearing what could happen, he was curious about what could happen, and he wanted to learn and take from any possible lesson. And my father, when he came to America, he did similar things where he would put the challenge out to all his friends and students and say, hey, if you know somebody, a martial artist, and you know he wants to test his art against mine, I'll do that for him. And that was a little bit more to, you know, build a following and build interest in jiu-jitsu in America. My grandfather was more to study and just to compare arts. My father would have, he would teach private lessons in his garage all day, every day. He uses the analogy that if they weren't all wearing white gis when they walked in and out, the neighbors would have probably considered that they were dealing drugs, him and Hoist, out of our home. That's how much all day, so every 30 minutes, someone knew walking in the home. So my father would be teaching somebody for 6-8 months, and everybody has a martial artist friend, whether it's kickboxing or karate. So they would say, hey, Hario, you know, I know someone, and he does karate, and his instructor says jiu-jitsu isn't that good. So now you have both students saying, okay, let's get them together, and they would fight in the garage, and my dad would document this, and we have a whole bunch of videos archived, and that's what gave birth to the UFC.
Yeah, those Gracie in action videos were a real eye-opener for a lot of people, you know, especially myself. And it's incredible because, you know, you had your grandfather who basically, I assume, created the same kind of spark that your father created here in Brazil, basically using the same methods, correct? I mean, it was this kind of challenge matches to the Vale Tudo fights. And then your father came over and basically did the same thing here in Southern California, correct?
Yes.
So now that, you know, UFC has come and we all got to, you know, I know you talk about it regularly, you know, we all got to see Hoist Gracie, you know, basically defeat other opponents, you know, larger opponents, you know, striking, you know, karate, boxing based opponents with, you know, technique, given his size compared to most of the others. But you haven't necessarily stopped the journey. You now and your brother Henner have basically seemed to take the journey to not so much of needing to expose jiu-jitsu to the world, but now trying to make it, you know, applicable that people can learn jiu-jitsu all over the world through your Gracie University and now the new digital age. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. The other day somebody told me, he said, you don't have to build a road to Las Vegas every time you want to go to Vegas. You just build the road once and you go when you like. And today there is this this idea that if you're a Gracie or if you're an instructor that you have to fight professionally in MMA or in some kind of competition to prove that you're worthy and therefore you can teach. But Hannah and I have not taken the direction of MMA or fighting. We've done little small events here or there, but it's by no means our main concern. And yet we have, you know, hundreds, I would say tens of thousands of people who want to learn from us, maybe even over 100,000 who want to learn. And this is because they believe that we're true, I guess, carriers of Helio Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, how it was practiced and performed in Brazil in the early 1900s. And today in MMA, like, for example, Hoist Gracie, my uncle, has he fought MMA?
Yeah, I guess not the sportive kind.
Not really. He fought Matt Hughes. That was his one MMA fight. But Hoist's fights in the beginning, there were no judges. There were no time limits. There were no weight classes. So the idea of fighting MMA, it doesn't really mix with Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. MMA and Gracie Jiu-Jitsu don't really mix too well. Now, there are elements of Jiu-Jitsu that can be used in the MMA world, and fighters actually have sought us out, and we teach many fighters who fight today MMA, and we help them. But our focus now is teaching the element of Jiu-Jitsu, which you don't really see in MMA so much, which is the element of survival, which the everyday person out there just wants to know that if they get in a fight and they end up underneath somebody in a headlock, they cannot get knocked out. tuck their chin in and be safe for 3.5 minutes and just not get knocked out. And if the fight gets broken up, great, it was a victory. They went home safe. And there are millions of people that need that and they want that. And there are a very small select amount of people who want to be UFC champions. I'm sorry, many want to be UFC champions, but there's a very small number that actually will put in the hard work that it takes to be an MMA champion.
Did you always feel this way, though, about teaching? I mean, growing up in the Gracie family, did you ever feel any kind of pressure or, you know, some kind of need to feel like, I need to go out and compete in a fight? Did you feel that?
Yeah, I felt like I wanted to fight in the UFC. Mm-hmm. I was at UFC 1 live, UFC 2. I was always with Hoist, just watching him fight, even in Japan. And being around that, of course, and seeing how much he is respected by the fans and the country and just other fighters, I thought, you know what? I kind of want this same respect, and I want to be in his shoes to a certain degree. But as I got a little bit older, I realized that, one, I wouldn't have the ability to, you know, show jiu-jitsu the way that Hoist did in the beginning, because now the rules are changing. But also, people are looking up to me and they're wanting to learn from me without me having ever fought. So I don't really need to do what he did to be respected the same way he's being respected. And obviously he has, you know, a whole different level of respect because he's the man who started all of this for us. But I am my ego is being complimented very well in the sense of I'm being thanked every day by parents for helping their children or women and men all alike for, you know, dealing with problems and challenges in everyday life. So I love it.
Yeah. And, I guess with that, since you and Henner decided to go ahead and take this, teaching jiu-jitsu online, I know at first it caused quite a bit of controversy throughout the jiu-jitsu community, as I'm sure you know. And it seemed like the biggest gripe was if you were giving away, or I don't want to say giving away, but I'm not trying to disrespect, but I'm saying if you're going to go ahead and award someone a blue belt from studies that they've done online, you know, would the quality be there? That was seemed to be the general concern for most people, which I'm not even sure if that should be the main concern.
Well, I have tested so many people when I travel to Utah and Nebraska. I'm in the middle of nowhere, in these states all around the country and even other parts of the world. And I have tested people for their blue belts and been blown away every single time by how well they do. And I feel like when somebody learns online, they're almost more dedicated. There's almost a different level of attention to detail because you're learning online with one of your little buddies in a garage or in your living room versus being on a mat with 20, 30 people where you have an instructor who's answering all your questions. You learn to really stop and pay attention to details because you know you don't have anything other than the computer. You can't afford to kind of slack and fall asleep. So my concern about people not being deserving and not being good enough learning online, it's non-existent. Yeah. I was a little worried in the beginning, my first two or three tests, but now every single person I've tested, I would say I probably tested 35 or 40.
Yeah.
Usually I do, other instructors will test and they'll watch the videos online. But in person, 35, 40, every single one blew my mind.
That is kind of interesting now that I think about it because, you know, if you're in the jiu-jitsu room, you know, and, you know, one technique starts working for you, you know, against a lot of different people. I mean, you kind of have you gravitate towards doing that. And you can kind of get stuck in certain places. But I guess if you were, you know, alone with one friend, you would really kind of do your best to learn every single thing you could because you don't know if it's practical with everybody. You have no idea, you know?
Great point.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. But one of the other things that I always was curious about and I kind of wanted to ask you is when this online thing got started and this really started kicking, you know, we've all been in a jiu-jitsu school where, you know, maybe not the right person walks through the door. You know what I mean? That may not have the kind of correct integrity or, you know, disposition to really, you know, to almost trust with these kind of techniques. Does that concern you at all that you can't look the person in the eye who you're teaching all the time?
Of course. And that's even before my dad made VHS, that he would sell VHS, him and Hoist. And this was before the UFC, right around the UFC time. And there were other UFC fighters that were purchasing Hoist Gracie, Hardon Gracie, VHS. And they were watching those before the UFCs and during the UFCs. So if you make a book, someone can buy the book. And yes, Gracie University is the best learning tool ever. So it makes sense that we should be a little more concerned if it falls into the bad hands. But you have to think about it. You can either A, help, you know, 10,000 people or 1,000 people with yourself eye to eye, just me physically being there, or I can help 100,000 people and maybe, you know, 200 that have bad intentions get it. At least I helped 90,000 more than I would have if I had to do it in person.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, correct. I guess, you know, sometimes, yeah, the greater good is always better, but, you know, it is a concern, I guess. You need to take into account every now and then.
Yeah, and the truth is, everything's going digital. Like, we did it with jiu-jitsu, and, you know, we were the first ones to do it. But who knows what else? Like, people are going to college. They're getting degrees online, and there's only going to be more happening online. You could probably learn how to be a mechanic, and who knows what can be done online. So we're just happy we did it first.
All right, on. One thing that I noticed, too, with your family is, you know, with this, the ability to compete, you know, like you were saying, you like to be curious, to test yourself. That was one of the main things that your grandpa did. And, you know, now it seems that, you know, we're talking about, you know, something that is so global now, jiu-jitsu. Hardly anyone doesn't know what jiu-jitsu is now, or knows Gracie jiu-jitsu for that matter. And yet you still decided to go out and compete in Metamoris now 2 times. Did you ever, you know, feel any pressure there? You know, that you're kind of representing like your brand now of jiu-jitsu. Did you feel any apprehension now that, you know, hey, this is a personal test to myself, but yet, you know, other people might take this as some other kind of jiu-jitsu, you know, maybe more effective than mine, or, you know, a catch wrestling system might be better than jiu-jitsu. Did you ever have that kind of internal battle with yourself?
Obviously, if I forget that Josh Barnett is a jiu-jitsu black belt, then I could walk away like, wow, is catch wrestling that good? But let's not get it twisted. As much as Josh Barnett, you know, uses catch wrestling, he uses jiu-jitsu. If not only to be aware and to stop jiu-jitsu and defend jiu-jitsu. So the answer is no. And even if the question is, you know, me losing, I lost in 13 minutes, he got a little toe hold on me, a footlock. And that footlock is very jiu-jitsu-like. I haven't caught it from that reverse position, but I've seen it before in jiu-jitsu, and I've caught many very similar variations of toe holds. So for all I know, he used jiu-jitsu on me. And when you say my jiu-jitsu, do you mean Gracie Academy, or do you just mean Brazilian jiu-jitsu as a whole?
I mean Brazilian jiu-jitsu as a whole. I think it's clear that a lot of jiu-jitsu factions have now have taken much more of a sportive approach with the IBJJF and whatnot. And, you know, there's a lot of different schools now that kind of focus on that style of jiu-jitsu. Your first match was against a great sport jiu-jitsu player, Andre Galval, one of the most decorated jiu-jitsu athletes on earth there is today. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm saying. Does it make you feel like more people might want to focus on a brand that's not specifically designed for self-defense?
Well, I guess if the person that's watching, if their dream is to compete in tournaments and be an Olympian in jiu-jitsu in 14 years or whatever, then yes, then I might be worried. But I know that there are more people out there who just want to learn how to defend themselves. They want to learn basic principles and techniques that can be applied to everyday life. They want to have fun and break a sweat. They don't want to worry about competition and performing and, you know, meeting the expectations of their coach or their team or society. They just want to be on the mat and have a good time. So because of that, I think when people watch me go against Josh Barnett, you have to look at it a couple different ways. One is, I don't care. I'll roll with anybody in the world. And that's because of how confident I am in my jiu-jitsu and my ability to tap, clearly. But I think about, like, me, for example, if I could teach all of my students to roll with somebody who's 80 pounds heavier than they are, 70 pounds heavier, and just not lose for 5 minutes, whether it be in a grappling match or in a street fight or in an MMA round, they can just survive 5 minutes in either one of those three, my student is doing amazing, and I'm very proud of them, and that's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, so it's a great accomplishment. It's a great confidence booster for sure.
Yeah, so me going 13 minutes, and I a little bit, you know, made a mistake of trying to be funny and throw my legs around him and almost create movement with Josh Barnett. And I trapped myself. I made a huge mistake and he capitalized on it. So he did a good job. But even myself, I'm confident that if we roll again, the next time he won't catch that footlock. It doesn't mean that I might not lose to him again, because everybody loses, everybody makes mistakes. But just learning, and the next time we roll, it might be 17 minutes. And then after four more times of rolling with Josh Barnett, let's say I rolled him for 2 weeks straight at his school, he might never beat me again. That's possible. That's how things work. And I myself, I feel that with my own students. I have kids that I roll with that are 25 years old, 22, 30 years old. And I noticed that over a month's period of time, these guys become so much more aware of what I have to offer. And they even start to learn my game and they figure me out. And I can't surprise them as much. So it's only a matter of time before anybody grows. And that includes me with against Andre Galvan or against Josh Barnett or anybody in the world. So losing once is the least of my worries. Learning that one time is what matters the most.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, you've started a kind of a movement, or should I say like a philosophy in jiu-jitsu, of this keep it playful. Maybe you can expound more on it, but it seems like, you know, you just... The mindset isn't to so much go out there with pressure on your back, you know what I mean? But to go out there and compete, to go ahead and put yourself in maybe bad positions while you're training, to go ahead and explore so that you can really, you know, advance your game, you know, from a place that you can only do if you put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think like this started because I would watch students train and I would notice like one student would fight and use 100% effort to prevent his or her partner from passing their guard, from advancing in a position. And I thought to myself, man, why is this person fighting so hard to stop the other person? Like, they're using everything they have. And I realized it's because they have this mindset of they just can't lose. They can't be overcome. And what that does is it keeps my student from experiencing jiu-jitsu and experiencing the role. So then I thought to myself, we have to allow my student to change positions and to create movement. And it's okay to let somebody pass your guard and side mount you. So I thought we have to change something. And I believe that they think that they're training like the most serious way possible and taking it the most serious, let's call it real way, the real way of training. So one could argue that that person is keeping it real. And I am not letting you, I will not let you pass my guard no matter what. I'm going to keep it real. If you can't pass my guard, you're not going to pass it. And then I thought, well, wow, keeping it real is almost like keeping it stupid. Because if you keep it real and you keep somebody in your guard for 5.5 minutes or 7 minutes in a 10-minute round, you just wasted 7 minutes. Now, it doesn't mean that there isn't a place for that. You can't do it sometimes. But after 2 or 3 minutes, once you've established, or after a minute, you've established that they cannot, you know, overcome your guard, let them pass your guard selfishly so that you can learn from the next position and experience more, because it's all about experiences. That's how we build comfort and understanding. So then I said, man, there's no more keep it real. We have to now keep it playful. It doesn't mean we can't resist for a minute and then change and change. And it's just really taking full advantage of the 5 or 10 minute sparring session and your training partner. And then people say, oh, well, we can't keep it playful in Metamoris or in the UFC. And no, you can't. Mm-hmm. And no, I didn't. Even against Andre Galvan, who was somebody who took me down and was on top of me the whole time, controlling me in the side mount most of the time, I'm not keeping it playful. I'm just not losing to him. I'm defending and I'm being efficient with my energy and I'm just keeping my elbows tucked in and surviving. I didn't keep it playful against him. Now, I didn't keep it real, which would have meant what?
Not letting him pass.
No, which would have meant keep it stupid.
Right.
Keep it inefficient.
Burn out your energy.
Burn out my energy. Fight really hard to keep him in my guard when he might end up passing after 7 minutes. And then when he side mounts me, now I'm tired because I held guard for so long. So keep it playful, and I didn't even create this. This is from my grandfather. My grandfather would force me to lay down and let people side mount me and create different positions for me to be in where I was in the inferior position and learn to defend and watch the attacks. So keep it playful is just, it's dedicated to him in the sense of, you guys, we have to be comfortable in worst case scenarios because then worst case scenarios will cease to exist. So if we don't do that, we're wasting our time and we're not building comfort. And this is the comfort that we need to be able to walk around in the street and know that if someone in the street takes me down and side mounts me, I'm okay. I don't have to escape. I can patiently wait. When they want to punch me or elbow me or knee hit me in the ribs, they'll give me a little space and then I'll move. But I've been there so many times that I can apply that, you know, strategy of patience and timing with anybody, whether it's a professional athlete or a punk in the street.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, nowadays with training, you know, it seems like we got these beautiful facilities now. I've never been to the Gracie Academy, but I do want to come visit one day. But I've heard wonderful things. You know, I hear they got fresh towels and, you know, great showers and beautiful facility, the museum, what have you. It's so inviting, right? I mean, you get to walk in these mats and, you know, everyone's friendly. You know, you get to kind of do jiu-jitsu at your own pace. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a soccer mom or someone, like you say, wants to compete, or maybe just someone who really wants to learn self-defense. You can kind of all stay on these mats. You can all, you know, find a very comforting, you know, non-abrasive way to learn jiu-jitsu. But I remember hearing stories, so just let me know if this is not true. When the Gracie Academy started, though, and you still had these Gracie in action matches, like, you know, jiu-jitsu wasn't as far spread of the world, that your father sometimes would look at one of your students and say, how much do you weigh? You know, and your student might be like 150 pounds. You know, I got a guy that's coming in and he weighs about that much. Would you be willing to fight him today? You know, and a lot of the stories said this. It didn't matter if someone was coming in or not. He was kind of looking for the student's reaction if he would be willing to test himself. You know, is there any kind of, and I think that's good. I mean this in a good way. I think that's awesome. I think in order for people to expand and to really grow as a person, you need that. You kind of need a push every now and then. You need to be willing to have some faith in your abilities to test what you know. But that doesn't really happen anymore, does it?
Yeah, quite often my grandfather would say, hey, you don't even know your full potential. And it goes the same for our students. So my father wouldn't ask somebody to fight if he didn't believe they were ready. And I don't think he would ask students that were very new. It wasn't somebody who's been training for 6 months. It would be friends of his that had been training for 4 or 5 years. And they were almost, they could have almost been assistant instructors or, you know, just the higher advanced belts. And you're right, he did that because he knows that them fighting or at least preparing to fight and mentally preparing would at least would give them a boost in their overall confidence. And you can't get it really any other way. So I don't know how much it happened back in the day. I haven't heard of too many of those stories. I've heard of a few for sure. But today, not really. Even though when someone does come in, and I would say in the last 10 years or 8 years since Hannah and I have been running the Gracie Academy, there have been about 5 or 6 cases of people walking in wanting to fight. Inaction type things. The last one I would say was about 3 years ago. The kid was like 28 years old, 300 pounds, 280 pound kid. I think ex-Air Force.
He must not have the internet.
He must not have internet, yeah. And he came in and he said, yeah, I wanna fight somebody. And I asked him, like, do you want to train jiu-jitsu or do you want to fight? He said, yeah, I want to test myself. So I got to the bottom of it and he said, yeah, I want to fight. So we did a little match in the middle of the group class. And because he was 280 pounds, I didn't ask any students if they wanted to roll also. I just left it at that and it was done because 280 is a little bit of a weight. But no big deal. The guy knew nothing and I just kind of side mounted him, held him down and did a little arm lock or choke. But they're very rare, and it's rare because people have now accepted that jiu-jitsu is the X factor when it comes to fighting and martial arts. It's the most important one.
Yeah, the truth is out there. It's definitely effective. I mean, there's nothing that can be said different. Do you think, though, that, you know, I assume almost everyone in your family, you know, has gone through something like that, though, you know, an actual challenge or maybe an actual fight or some kind of, you know, confrontation to where you need to test your skills to become, you know, a full black belt. Do you think that should be required, you know, for like the general public? I mean, your family is incredible. I mean, they're incredible fighters.
So you're saying, should we require all black belts from all schools to be tested in the manner of fighting someone that they don't understand, they don't know who that person is or what they know, just fight this person right here?
Maybe, I know it sounds crazy, but I mean not so much that. Not just so much go up to a random person and pick a fight. But I mean...
Organized.
Will you be willing, to test yourself before, you know, we kind of bestow this upper level on you? You know what I mean?
I think it's a great idea. And I feel like any one of our black belts would be very ready for that challenge. I think that many schools around the world, I don't know what percentage, maybe 50% or 75%, their black belts won't be prepared for that. And it's because it's not uncommon for a jiu-jitsu school to teach jiu-jitsu and just forget to mention punches and kicks and headlocks and headbutts for 7 years or 9 years. I've known people who train jiu-jitsu and I've met them. They've come to visit and they said, yeah, I've been training for 9 years and we've never discussed somebody punching us, getting punched at.
Yeah, or a headlock or anything like that.
There you go. So if that's the case, those brown belts and black belts at that school, I'd be a little bit worried about because they have no understanding of, you know, what the unskilled street opponent might throw at them. So therefore, they might actually get in trouble. And then it'll make them lose faith in jiu-jitsu. And all the other students that happen to watch are going to lose faith in jiu-jitsu. But the tricky part is that they're not even really learning jiu-jitsu the way that jiu-jitsu was originally intended to be taught.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't, you're not even learning the actual art of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. You're learning a spin-off. It's like a little modified jiu-jitsu, which neglects fighting, which is not what Elio Gracie and Carlos Gracie taught. They taught jiu-jitsu for self-defense, and they would fight, you know, to test and to prove the effectiveness of their jiu-jitsu, but they never considered themselves fighters. They just said, man, this is the big guy. I want to go fight him. Prove that what I know works. And when they did that, they had the whole country behind them wanting to learn more. Even when they lost fights, people wouldn't say, oh, wow, you lost. They would say, wow, you lost, but you fought for 25 minutes or you went to a draw, but you fought for 30 minutes. You lost, but you lost to somebody who was 70 pounds heavier and you survived for so long. So it's still inspiring. I still want to learn. And that's, you know, we can never duplicate what they did because, like you said, we have the internet now and everybody knows. But there are still people out there who want to learn this jiu-jitsu. So we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Do you get concerned about that? I mean, there is, you know, all these different avenues now for people to compete. And, you know, the most readily available would be MMA. But, you know, like you said, Hoist didn't really fight in that aspect of an MMA fight except for the one time against Matt Hughes. But now that is usually where we see jiu-jitsu in application. And do you ever get concerned now that the kind of jiu-jitsu that is going to be taught, the kind that people are going to have most readily available to them, is going to be something that they could utilize within a 5-minute period of time? That they're going to kind of go away from, you know, a traditional defensive mindset, like you were saying first. Like, are you able to protect yourself on the street just until someone comes and gives you help?
So, well, I get worried that when people watch MMA or jiu-jitsu competitions, they watch it and they say, you know what? I can't do that. Even if it's successful, they think, I can't do that. Look at, that's ridiculous. I don't have the physical attributes to do that. And if it fails, then they might say, wow, doesn't work that well. And it failed because, similar to me in Metamoris, jiu-jitsu didn't fail. I failed. I decided to be a little bit more active and throw my legs around Josh Barnett, and I paid for it. The same way jiu-jitsu fighters in MMA might decide to try to box and exchange punches with another fighter, and then they get knocked out. They didn't maintain safe distance and stay away and just use patience and grab the person when they could. They decided to throw a little bit of ground and pound and they end up getting arm locked. So humans make mistakes and they get egotistical or they get, you know, their pride. So that's what I worry a little bit about, is that people, they lose faith in jiu-jitsu because of who they're watching. The representative, you know, drop the ball a little bit. And that's why I myself have to be careful competing. And, you know, when I compete, most people know me and they know that there's two sides of me. And I made it very clear that I kind of just tried. I even tried to stay standing up with Josh Barnett and wrestle him a little bit.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, and just for a small interlude, we should probably let people know what we're talking about right now is an event called Metamoris. And Hedon Gracie came in last second. It was probably at 3 days' notice. There was an original match set up for a man named Josh Barnett versus another jiu-jitsu competitor named Cyborg. These are big guys. These are really large men. Josh Barnett probably weighs around 250 pounds. Hedon Gracie weighs 190. And so when he's talking about stepping in last minute to compete, I mean, this was a shock to everyone who actually watches this. You know what I mean? So it was a grappling event at the highest level. These are some of the best grapplers there are on earth. And Hedon Gracie went ahead and stepped into this match and decided to go ahead and just give it a go.
And when you say it's a shock to everybody who watched it, it's not a shock to people who know me.
Yeah.
My students aren't really shocked. They're like, oh, wow, that's cool that he's doing that. But the shock comes from people who never prepare or imagine rolling with somebody who is 50 pounds heavier or 60 pounds heavier. But my students, the talk of like, yeah, somebody might be 40 pounds heavier than you holding you down from the side mount. That's normal talk. So when there's nobody for Josh Barnett, they're almost like, wow, that makes sense. Of course he don't volunteer. And that's what jiu-jitsu is missing, is it's missing instructors and students that believe so much in the art that they don't have to, you know, pick a sparring partner who is their same weight. And they don't avoid somebody who's 35 pounds heavier, a brown belt, because they're a purple belt who's 165 pounds. They just say, I'll go with you or anybody, because at the end of the day, it's all practice and it's all a game compared to the only one place that this matters, which is in real life and in the street. So Metamoris is a game compared to a street fight. The UFC is a game compared to a street fight. You are so protected by referees and judges and regulations and commissions and coaches. So to really make the UFC like something where, you know, it's the most serious and it's the realest. It's as real as it gets in sport, which, yeah, you know, I appreciate watching the UFC and I have fun watching these fights. But people need to realize that even in the UFC, like the fights are stopped when you're not responding and punching back. When someone's hitting you and you're not responding and defending yourself, the fight is stopped. Or when there's not enough movement, they might stand you back up. So these are things that, you know, you won't get stood back up. They won't stand you back up in a street fight. So jiu-jitsu exists for that reason, and especially the Gracie Academy and many other schools around the world also. Every day I feel like there are new schools jumping on board that realize, you know what, we've been teaching jiu-jitsu and we haven't been addressing the fact that you might be stuck under somebody for 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes and you have to know how to survive. And now, because we are so strong behind this message, there are schools that have been so sportive for 5, 10, 15 years, and they're slowly shifting and saying, you know what? Let's teach jiu-jitsu more for survival and self-defense to the everyday person. Also, because the instructor is getting older. An instructor who's 27, you can teach whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But 10 years later, now they're 37, 40 years old. They start to realize, you know what? I can't do whatever I want. I have to do what I can and not what I want. And that was Eddie Gracie's big message. You know, I don't defeat my opponents, they defeat themselves. I don't do what I want, I do what I can. And these are things that, as a teacher, it takes time to realize that you are on a track that you can't stay on forever. And the track that I mean is the track of a sport, not a lifestyle.
Interesting. So you had zero reservations whatsoever that you were going to go in there with a guy 50 pounds heavier. And who's, I mean, not just, this isn't just a guy who's just a big guy. Like, this is a guy who is classically trained, like mm-hmm. you're saying, in jiu-jitsu, in catch wrestling. I think he even knows judo. I mean, it's a totally different aspect, correct? I mean, we're not talking about just, you know, taking on some big guy in the street where it's technique against someone who's unskilled. Like, this is technique versus technique and outweight. You know, correct? That didn't concern you at all?
That did not concern me at all. And the reason why is because today, you know, I don't have tens of thousands of students because I have 7 gold medals or I've won Abu Dhabi 3 times or I'm a UFC champion. I have tens of thousands of students, myself and the Gracie Academy and Henner, because we teach quality jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And we explain it clearly. And anybody who logs on to GracieUniversity.com and watches a lesson, they say, wow, I can do this. And if your lesson is that good, and anybody who watches your lesson believes that they can do it, they're going to start doing it. And before you know it, you're going to have more people wanting to learn, and more and more and more. And today, jiu-jitsu instructors, they teach jiu-jitsu catering to the athlete. So somebody might walk in and watch a class and say, wow, this is ridiculous. I can't hang. Just the warm-up I can't do in here. So my people who are behind myself and the Gracie Academy, they take the small lessons, like you mentioned, surviving for 13 minutes, it's a small victory. Saying yes to somebody who's 60 pounds heavier, small victory. Doing it on 3 days' notice, small victory. So there's all these little small things. Obviously, it would have been amazing to have went to a draw or beat him. But if I can't get, you know, 7 victories in entering a Metamorphosis event, I'm going to take 3 victories or 4.
Yeah, but I mean, it's crazy because, you know, your family has such a giant history that it's exciting for people knowing that you're going to compete. You know what I mean? Like, there's this need to see, you know, they want to see you. They want to see Henner. You know, everyone gets super pumped with Kron, you know, gets out there. I mean, it's an exciting factor, and it does up the stakes. So I know what you're saying, that, you know, technically Josh Barnett is a jiu-jitsu black belt. But, I mean, that's not how they were, you know, advertising the fight. It was clear as day. Josh Barnett, catch wrestling, you know. Henner Gracie. Yeah, Gracie jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's got to add something to it. You know what I mean? There's got to be, you know, in the back of your mind, you have to know that's there.
Well, I know it's there.
Yeah.
It's the same way, even in the UFC today. You could say, like, Matt Hughes, for example. Is Matt Hughes jiu-jitsu? He beat
he's
Hoist.
He's a wrestler, yeah.
Is he jiu-jitsu? He loves jiu-jitsu.
Loves jiu-jitsu.
If he says he doesn't love jiu-jitsu, he's lying. And he says submission wrestling. It's all related. I mean, is catch wrestling? What is catch wrestling? Is it jiu-jitsu?
I guess it incorporates it all, right?
Is catch wrestling jiu-jitsu?
Sure.
Is jiu-jitsu catch wrestling?
Why not?
Is judo jiu-jitsu? I mean, they're all, it's like whales and dolphins. You know what I mean? They're all in the
they're
same
all related.
Family.
They're all related. I was going to say that when your father and, you know, started the Gracie Academy, was it always just a goal to try to get the sport out, or I shouldn't say sport, I should say martial art out to as many people as possible? Or were you guys actually setting up an academy, kind of like you set up a mixed martial arts academy, to like, it's kind of like a lab to evolve the sport? Like, are you constantly trying to just, you know, kind of do what you do, or are we still becoming something else?
Well, naturally, you no matter what, you can't help but evolve. My grandfather used to say, we should pay our private class students because we learn more than they do while teaching them. So teaching jiu-jitsu is a great way to learn and to grow. I think my father, the academy opened because we really believe that we have the best job in the world, in the sense that, you know, whether it's a child who's being bullied or a police officer who can't go back to work because they were attacked and they can't overcome the fear of being attacked again, or all people from all walks of life. So our job is so special that we want to continue to help people overcome their everyday challenges and feel more comfortable in their own skin. And it's so rewarding to see that process take place. Sometimes you have kids who have been out of school for 6 months. They train for a month, month and a half. Now they're back in school the next year. And the mom has no idea how that's even possible, because she went to this psychiatrist or who knows what, and all kinds of doctors, and nobody could solve the problem, but jiu-jitsu did. So that's very addicting for us to continue to provide that and help the world like this. That's why the school was opened. Because obviously we like getting paid, but more than getting paid is we like seeing people's lives transformed for the good. And as for the laboratory of, you know, jiu-jitsu being, you know, growing and changing, yes. I mean, every day we talk about positions and we share ideas and we grow together, my brothers and I. And I remember being with my dad and my grandfather and uncles and, you know, sharing concepts and tweaking techniques and sharing with our students.
Yeah, it seems that... you know, like we were talking about earlier, there is kind of like this gravitation towards, you know, MMA style related jiu-jitsu, no-gi related jiu-jitsu. Are you guys incorporating, I know the combatives program just off the bat. I know that is all no gi. You know, it's strictly based for self-defense. Are you guys also incorporating more of the maybe the sportive aspects of no-gi jiu-jitsu?
No, I don't think that no-gi jiu-jitsu in the sense of jiu-jitsu versus jiu-jitsu, right?
Right.
We might grow in that world, but not the sportive in the sense of points and time limits and judges and you have to be rushed in your jiu-jitsu. I don't ever like even talking about jiu-jitsu that requires me to go, move. Now to say, hey, I might one day roll with my friend here who's a brown belt, no gi, and I do this guard pass and it's not really working. So let's improvise, let's move a little bit in the no gi world to make it work. But with no expectation of this happening under any, you know, I guess time.
Yeah.
It can happen whenever it happens. So no-gi jiu-jitsu, yes, we're growing it, but not for the sportive realm, just for the pure pleasure. You and I both grappling gi or no-gi, yes, constantly growing.
What do you think about that, though? What do you think about now your brother, Halleck, has started Metamoris, as the event we've been talking about. I mean, that has to have some kind of form of entertainment value to it. So do you think this is good? Like, is this a necessary component to go ahead and, I mean, it's got to get away from self-defense a little bit, you know, because we're going to have some kind of time limit. We're going to have some, you know, some kind of, you know, structure to the way we find winners and losers. You know, is this, you know, do you find that good for jiu-jitsu as an instructor who teaches primarily traditional self-defense, Alio Gracie jiu-jitsu?
I think that Metamoris is good for the niche crowd, right? People who know jiu-jitsu, they appreciate it and they like to watch it. But I feel like the average person who does not know jiu-jitsu or really grappling, when they watch a Metamoris match, they're not going to say, oh, well, I can't wait to watch the next one. It's going to be hard to want to watch more and more matches. Unless the matches were, you know, let's just say some amazing wrestler from Iran or Russia, who knows where, versus a sambo specialist from Russia and an Iranian wrestler. If you start to do matches like that where it's different grappling arts and wrestling arts, then it might add a visual effect that could draw more people. Or myself versus Josh Barnett. Like, you don't have to really like jiu-jitsu or be a niche crowd. You can just say, man, this guy's 60 pounds heavier. This will be interesting. So more matchups that are a little bit different, I think, is the key to Metamoris. But whether it's gi or no gi, and you have two guys that are black belts, similar styles, a lot of times the match is, it becomes very slow. And they both neutralize each other, and it loses the entertainment value. And that's something that Halleck knows very well, that, you know, some matches are entertaining and some aren't. Some athletes go for the kill and some don't. I don't really go for the kill. I'm not a Metamoris athlete. I've done it twice, but it's not in my blood to fight, and get on top and try to kill somebody.
People are going to...
And submit somebody.
People are going to make me want to ask you this. Do you think Henner will ever compete in Metamoris?
Henner...
I got that question more than any other question going into this interview. They're like, can you ask him if his brother will compete ever?
I asked Henner to compete. You should do it. Come on, Henner, you should do it. And Henner says, man, if I do it, I would want to dedicate, you know, 2.5 months to put on a show. And yeah. Compete and do what Metamoris needs, which is two people trying to submit each other. So, and to dedicate 2.5 months of me competing and exercising to be able to give whoever I roll with, you know, a fight for their life, that's 2.5 months of not filming Gracie University.
Oh,
like
I see.
We did this morning, we filmed for 2 hours. You want me to start to cancel filming, cancel traveling to teach seminars to law enforcement or at our certified training centers around the world, our schools that we had that teach our programs. So there's all these things that are happening on our everyday lives and our schedules, our wives. He's going to have a kid soon. I'm about to have 2 kids. So to just stop everything to compete. And then when we go and compete and we win or it's a draw or we lose, now you have people who watch us and say, you know what? I want to compete too.
Yeah.
But no, you don't. You don't want to compete. Is it wrong to compete? No. Go have fun. Do it once. The thing is, when you make competition the focus behind your jiu-jitsu training, I believe you have a much less chance of training for a lifetime.
Oh, interesting.
Like, and it would be beautiful if people could be 57, 66 years old, because we know some 50-year-olds today that enjoy jiu-jitsu, but they started 2 years ago, right? It would be nice to have people start at 27, 17, 13, and train their whole lives. But that can't happen if you fall into this trap of the sportive competition world, or it's a lot less likely to happen.
Yeah, I think I agree with you 100%. You know, I work with a lot of MMA fighters, and that is the thing that we all know for sure, is that you have a very short window. You have a very limited amount of time to compete. It is a young man's sport because your body can only handle so much. Your brain can only take being punched so much. Your knees can only take, you know, running so much. You have a limited amount of clicks. And when you burn them up, you burn them up. And that is interesting, you know, because your grandfather was on the mat well into
90s.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And these students of ours, like, if you get into the sportive world, when, let's say you last for 7 years in the sportive jiu-jitsu realm, when the day comes where you say, you know, I can't compete anymore, I've had a couple knee surgeries from training so hard, when the day comes to just continue training jiu-jitsu, you know, and rolling around and having fun and just moving through the positions and discussing techniques and principles and sharing ideas, you realize that you're in a building that that doesn't happen in, that everybody is there, you know, what's the word? They're all
competing,
crawling and climbing over each other because they all want to be the next best champion. And there's not even an environment that allows for you to say, hey, you know what? Let's just go 50% and just move around, because it's nice to be 52 years old and be involved in something other than bingo or lawn bowling. You know, it would be cool to be 63 years old and say, hey, you know what? I do jiu-jitsu 3 times a week. But that's not happening. And I see people all the time. I see them in the grocery stores, in the street, and they say, wow, I used to do jiu-jitsu. Really? I'm like, yeah, I did it in the garage with Horion. And I'm like, yeah, it's my dad. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And I say, how old are you now? I'm sorry. They say, hey, I'm too old now. I can't do it anymore. Well, how old are you? 44. 44? They're too old at 44 because, believe it or not, even the Gracie Academy 15 years ago, there was a certain level of competition. When somebody would come and visit from another country or another state, the instructor would say, hey, go with him, show him. Show him where he's at. Send a little message with respect.
That still goes on.
Tap him 3, 4, 5 times and just show him that the Gracie Academy in Torrance or wherever, whatever school this is, that we mean business. And I myself, if every visitor who came into the academy, I personally had to send a message that you're at the Gracie Academy and watch this, I'm going to have somebody every single day. We have visitors from Turkey in town right now, Canada, and South Carolina at our school. I don't want to roll with them and beat them each 5 times to show them that I am who I am and they're visitors and I run this show. No, I roll with them and I let them arm lock me and they mount me and then I escape. I might choke them once, but I'm teaching them right off the bat that I would love for nothing more than for you to enjoy this game forever. And the only way you're going to do it is if you behave like me. And that's the behavior of someone who just wants to be here and have fun. It's like partnered yoga. It's partnered yoga with submissions and a little resistance here and there.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's interesting you say that. But, you know, I have watched documentaries on the Gracie family, of course. I always wanted to train jiu-jitsu since I was a boy. I ended up actually caught the first UFC. I was a big martial arts fan, loved it, loved Bruce Lee, loved everything, you know, wanted to be a ninja. You know, I wanted to be the whole package. I didn't know where to find it yet. I watched the first UFC, saw Hoyt's fight, wanted to do it, but I lived in Texas and there was no jiu-jitsu schools around. So it took me all the way until I was 30 years old to finally get my first jiu-jitsu class. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have enjoyed it. And you're right though. I'm not training like I'm going to go out there and, you know, compete next week. You know what I mean? I'm having to train from a much slower place because my body, you know, it's weird to say because I'm not super old, but I'm not 20, you know?
Got it. And your school allows you to train that way.
Oh, absolutely.
They allow you to work together and help each other. And it's not, there's no pressure for you to escape from under somebody. Or if you get submitted, you're not being judged by the coach. It's good.
Correct. Yeah.
You're very lucky.
Sometimes, you know what I mean? Well, we won't get into that. But, you know, another thing that's been cool learning about your family is, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but Hollis, is it?
Hollish.
Hollish.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to screw that up.
Rolls.
Rolls, yes.
Hollish.
I want to say Rolls, but Hollish. Okay. Mm-hmm. It seemed like when this one thing that I watched on him, that he was maybe one of the first guys that kind of broke out and really started, you know, training also wrestling. Or training sambo, or training, you know, whatever he was doing. He seemed like he really went out kind of searching for more and adapted that back into his jiu-jitsu. Today, you get to work with some of the greatest athletes, you know, on the planet. You get to work with, you know, Mark Munoz, who just retired, but yeah, I know he's a regular, you know, fighter that works with you. Mm-hmm. Ronda Rousey. You know, so many of these guys come to you guys for your jiu-jitsu instruction, but they also come from other backgrounds, you know, wrestling, judo, what have you.
Karate.
Do you guys kind of have that same, you know, mindset where you also, I mean, are you taking things from them?
I don't think as much as we could. Mm-hmm. I feel like even though we have, you know, discussed different things, and Ronda, for example, you know, especially judo is so easily transferable into jiu-jitsu. So Ronda, for example, has so much information to train for so many years that she has shared some cool things with us. But we also realize that a lot of what Ronda does is because she is the greatest athlete on the planet, one of the greatest athletes on the planet, right?
Besides being possibly the most technical. She's also the best athlete. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, she's someone who learns something once and then masters it. It's like, here, look at this. She just downloads it. So we, you know, to learn it and discuss it in our more advanced class is one thing. But a part of us really takes pride in just really teaching the purest form, how it was passed to us by our grandfather. So it doesn't mean that we're not open to learning things and sharing, you know, small details and advancements with students, you know, once they're well past, you know, the blue belt or the beginner phase. But that isn't our first concern, is not to learn from, you know, wrestlers and judo players and so on and apply those into our classes. No.
Interesting. So even with your you know, people coming to you guys, you know, at the highest level, you're staying true. You're staying true.
Yeah,
to
and the thing is that if the technique that they show us, you know, relies on natural body movements and it's very energy efficient and it can be applied in a street fight, and if it falls under these guidelines, then we're like, okay, this is great. But sometimes it requires a little more explosiveness and a little more, you know, power, because it's part of a sport. It's for the UFC or who knows what. So then we know that we can't expect our, you know, 45 people in the group class to execute it the same way, because they don't have that. It's not in their nature to explode and do the same way that Mark did.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this before. You called it the helio filter, correct? It's just you have to pass these certain guidelines. Got to be energy efficient, street applicable. I don't know if I know all the filters, but, you know.
Natural body movement.
But that is the way, you know, to make sure that you will incorporate a technique into your system.
And that's because my grandfather was not very strong, so it had to be energy efficient. And my grandfather was not very flexible, so it had to rely on natural body movements. And he wanted to be comfortable in everyday life and in the street fight, so it had to apply into a street fight. And we do believe that the world needs those three more than the world needs amazing wrestling takedown or a very explosive throw. And although these wrestling takedowns and karate kicks and strikes, judo techniques have technique and amazing timing and leverage and so on, they also require a lot more practice. Like jiu-jitsu compared to boxing, for example. For someone to train boxing for 6 months, are they ready to defend themselves against somebody who is 35 pounds heavier in a street fight? Is 6 months of boxing twice a week enough to defend yourself? I don't think so.
I come from boxing, and I wouldn't say you do it.
There are amazing boxers out there and amazing people who understand distance and movement, But boxing is something where you have to put more and more and more time into it. And once you get really good, you can do amazing things. But I feel like jiu-jitsu is something that you can train for 6 months, 8 months, and get into a fight. And even though you might not win and, you know, break the person's arm, you protect yourself. So I feel like jiu-jitsu is very easily downloaded and applied for the average person. And that's why I consider jiu-jitsu to be the greatest martial art ever. And so that's the mindset behind how we teach at the Gracie Academy. When you walk in, you spend 6 months learning how to defend yourself against the 36 most common street attacks, street situations, 6 months to a year. And after you pass that course, if you quit and never continue jiu-jitsu again, and you're done with jiu-jitsu, at least you'll have that little, those tools in your back pocket. And if you get in a fight, you have a much greater chance of surviving.
So as a fighter, though, if I came to you and I'm saying, you know, hey, Hedon, I understand that, you know, you teach a very pure style of jiu-jitsu, but I'm flexible and I am strong. Will you give me things that I can use that other people can't use?
Yes. And myself and Henner, we use things, and many of our students use and apply techniques that we don't teach until later on, once you're more advanced. But these techniques are second concern for these fighters. Our first concern is, even though you're athletic and, you know, you're strong and explosive and flexible, you still are somebody that is susceptible to being caught by Damian Maya in a triangle.
Yeah.
Or rear naked choked by this person or that person. So even though these MMA fighters, you know, are these great athletes, they still appreciate the ability to survive and just not get submitted. And then let their art, whether it be wrestling, karate, judo, who knows, let their art be how they win.
Yeah.
And let jiu-jitsu just be their, you know, I guess their partner and their backup when it comes to just not getting submitted by another jiu-jitsu person.
So that's mostly what, you know, you guys are coming to you for. When you're working with Mark Munoz, he's working defense.
Yes, and Ronda went against Alexis Davis, jiu-jitsu black belt. So it's nice to know that you can stop this jiu-jitsu black belt's, you know, top three or four submissions. And how do we know what those are? Because we know what the common submissions are in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and, you know, for all of your guys' work with Ronda, it's almost hard to showcase being that her last two fights only lasted 30 seconds. You know what I mean? That's got to be, you know, is that frustrating for you?
No.
She's not being able to demonstrate, you know.
No, we don't. It's not even about the fight day. You know, it's not about the fight day. The same way it isn't even about the kid who's getting bullied and the kid overcoming the bully. It's about the process, right? So the actual day of the fight, yes, I want the best for whatever fighter it is or the kid who's being bullied when they face their problem. It's about the journey and just training together and teaching and just giving our knowledge to whether it be a child or an MMA fighter.
That's amazing, yeah. You know, and even though their fights have been, or her fights have been so short, you guys do these wonderful breakdowns, and they're about 30 minutes long for a 15-second fight, but they're awesome. Let me tell you something. You guys have a gift in that you can explain jiu-jitsu and break down pivotal points of these matches. I remember, you know, Hedon and you were explaining the certain point in the last fight Ronda had with Kat Zingano,
yes,
where she's kind of just sitting on her, and she posts up, and she's waiting for Zingano's next move. Now, during the fight, of course, I didn't see that happen. But when you slow it down and you look, you guys break it down so, you know, effortlessly and perfectly. And you don't have to know jiu-jitsu to understand what you guys are conveying, which I think is great.
Yeah, I don't even think she was waiting for her next move. I think she was just there. And it's almost like water. It's like when you open the dam or like the floodgate, the water just boom, enters. So I felt like, in Ronda's fight, it wasn't even her like, I'm going to wait, and when that person moves, I'm going to do this. No, she's just there, and her body just adapted, and she just made it happen. And that's something that I've never seen or experienced ever before, except for with Ronda.
She's just so high level.
Adaptability.
Yeah.
And just, she doesn't even know. She didn't even know what she did. She didn't even train to do that.
I heard her talking about that after the fight, where she's like, "I've never hit this armbar from this angle before. I've never had this entry. I've never had this kind of setup." But
and that just show it's just tells you a lot about her and the way that she practices. Her body just fills space. She knows there's almost like a spider sense, right? Of yes and no behaviors. Of course, it's not perfect and she can make mistakes, but I can't even explain it to where it's like a cat. Like Ronda Rousey is more cat-like than Kat Zingano. Like you throw Ronda, you know, like a cat back to the ground and she ends up on top of you with your arm.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. Like, she is a super athlete, and she is adapting very quickly. Me coming from a boxing perspective, I usually get very frustrated watching the UFCs because that's usually the aspect that is most lacking. Nowadays, wrestling seems to be the strong point. Jiu-jitsu seems to be, you know, the good secondary spot. And then striking is kind of last. You know what I mean? It's like some people are good at it, some not. You know, you get guys like Lyoto Machida who, you know, started in a karate background and boom, you know, they're able to do these things that look like the movies. You know what I mean? One of my fighters, Chris Bill, landed this flying knee, you know, in his first UFC debut that literally looked like a Jet Li movie. You know, but there's very few people who can apply striking in a way that's so high level because, you know, they have to deal with all this now. Yeah. You know, they have to deal with all this crap of getting taken down. They have to deal with, you know, high level guys like you mentioned, Damian Maya, ready to choke you out every 2 seconds. You know what I mean? So Ronda is one of the few that came from a grappling sport who now is striking pretty good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's, you know, I would imagine Edmund is her coach. I would imagine that Edmund would agree that he's never met somebody who you give them directions and she's got it. Like, almost not even needing to, rephrase them or repeat the directions.
Yeah.
He'll just show her and she's got it. So it's ridiculous. Yes, she, whether it's boxing, jiu-jitsu, judo, ping pong, tennis, she could probably become a champion in something else. She's so young that if she says, you know what, I want to do roller derby and compete in the Olympics in roller skating or ice skating, you should probably go do it and win.
And what about you, though? Do you have an interest in any other combat sports besides grappling aspect? Do you enjoy boxing?
I have a couple of boxing friends that have helped me a little bit of boxing here and there. I appreciate it. I think it's beautiful. I like watching people who have good boxing skills in the UFC in different fights. But I've never, like, done it for more than 6 months straight. And I've done judo also at different judo schools. I've went and learned, and especially when I was like maybe 22, 23 years old, I've spent 6 months to a year at judo schools. So I like learning different techniques from all different arts. I haven't done any striking like karate or taekwondo. I've done a little bit of kickboxing back in the day, 10 years ago. Yes. So these are things that I appreciate, but I never stay true to them and do too much time on any other art. They're very short.
And are you a fan of anything else like that? Are you like an actual like fan of boxing? No. UFC in general? Do you like MMA?
No, watch? I'm not a fan of anything. I mean, I like MMA. I appreciate MMA. I appreciate a good fight. But there's never been a fight in MMA or in boxing or even a basketball game or any sport ever that I had to watch, that I was like super excited to watch. I would say the last one was maybe Nick Diaz and Anderson Silva. Like, I really want to watch this right now. But other than that, if I'm not training with the athlete, I don't really care.
Interesting.
Now, I can't wait to watch it later when I hear, wow, there was a great sweep or a great arm lock, I'll watch it. But I feel like a lot of times we stop our lives to watch the Lakers, or our live stop to watch, what was the boxing fight? Pacquiao and Mayweather. I didn't get to watch that fight. I don't have a TV, so that's...
You don't have a TV at all?
No, I don't have a TV. That's a problem. Oh. I gave it away when my daughter was born. But so these are things that I never... My whole life, I never watched a full basketball game, soccer game, baseball, football, nothing. And UFC and MMA, it's when I'm there or when someone who I know is competing, then I'm going to support them if I can.
That's interesting. Okay, so... You surf?
I have a couple times, like 5-6 times.
Not even surfing? Wow, because that's the one I always see. When I always see like the Gracies, it's like or jiu-jitsu.
I do a little bit of skimboarding and body surfing. I love the beach. But these are, and that's just for me as a hobby. It's a different story. I like playing ping pong. I like foosball. I like playing soccer on the beach. I like playing beach volleyball. But I don't like to compete. Even when we play like beach volleyball, I feel like it's something where Hanner, for example, like he wants to win every game. And it's like if you're on his team and you don't dive for the ball, he's going to get on your case. So I don't normally go on his team. Or if I do, I just don't care what he says. But so in general, my life is about teaching jiu-jitsu and eating good food and going to bed early and hanging out with my family. And that's it. It's a very simple life.
That's incredible.
Very few hobbies and very few things that I enjoy doing.
It's so weird because, I mean, you have these different successful people, you know what I mean? And it's kind of rare when their children follow their footsteps, but this Gracie family, it's like everyone is following these exact same path. Like everyone has like stayed true almost to their family line. You know what I mean? Like your dad isn't so much famous for going out and knocking people's heads off. You know what I mean? Or like being the best jiu-jitsu practitioner there is, but he's famous for cultivating and spreading jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. His sons now are famous for cultivating and spreading jiu-jitsu. Whereas like Hickson was, you know, world renowned for this guy is the best. This guy is a competitor. This guy, if you step on the mat with him, you're in some shit. You know what I mean? You're in some serious trouble. And now his son is a super competitor. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Do you think that's just a product of like what you guys have been ingrained with since you were little?
I think it's very strategic parenting, right? I don't know exactly how Hickson, you know, parented Krohn to make Krohn the phenom that he is. And I don't know exactly how my father parented me to make me be so about teaching and so about helping people and spreading jiu-jitsu. But I feel like it's the number one thing is not too much pressure. So my dad never really emphasized so much that we have to do it. He more just shared the success stories and shared how much, you know, he enjoyed doing it. And he would share, you know, the feedback from all his students around the world. And it's something where us as young kids, we would watch that and say, wow, like, look at this.
Did you get like the ramifications of it? Did you get like how serious it was? Because like we were saying earlier, I mean, when you talked about martial arts, there was all these like storied masters, and you would hear about like, oh, you know, my teacher, you know, was a, you know, Shaolin monk who came from here and this, that, you know. And then now when we had like actual practical martial arts, your family is basically the most important family in probably martial arts history. I mean, especially now in the modern times. Were you able as a child to kind of grasp, I'm a part of something here? And this thing is not like what everyone else does. We're not growing up in a normal family here.
Yeah, I'm obviously able to grasp it, but probably not the full grasp, right? And even now, sometimes, you know, I live in a fantasy land where I sometimes don't see how far jiu-jitsu has spread, or MMA, which is kind of all come from the same place. So yeah, I have to remind myself as to how amazing it is and how big it is and how much Edu Gracie and all his children and his nephews and his brother did for jiu-jitsu, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
It is incredible, you know, and
it's like the internet, right? Like you could, like the same time the internet blew up, when was it? 93? I don't have any idea.
It was sometime in the 90s. Yeah, I remember using it in the 90s for sure.
So whenever the internet just exploded, and now jiu-jitsu exploded and MMA at the same time, all same kind of thing. Same kind of growth. So there will never be a jump in the martial arts world, right? A growth and a change like there was because of the UFC and the Gracie family. The same way there'll never be a second internet.
So what at the end of the day, when all this is over and now you have children and now Henner's having children, I mean, what is the legacy that you wish to pass on to them, since your father and grandfather are almost mythical, you know?
Well, I think that if they do what I do, if my children teach jiu-jitsu, there will always be people who can benefit from jiu-jitsu, from the art. So my children, they can do anything in the world. They can be any kind of profession that they want. They can choose. But on top of that, they could teach jiu-jitsu alongside. That would be amazing. If you become a dentist, be a dentist 5 days a week, every day till 5 p.m., and then teach 1 hour of jiu-jitsu in the evening, you're going to have a successful life. Now, if you're just a dentist, it'll still be successful, but it might be a little bit boring.
Do you feel, and I heard an interview one time with Kron saying this, do you feel at all that it's important that people from your family, like, you know, someone with the Gracie name still is able to always compete at the top level, whether it be sport jiu-jitsu or, you know, a UFC fight or whatever? Because, I mean, Kron said that he felt some pressure that, hey, you know, we got to be able to carry this on, you know, and show that we can still compete with anybody.
Well, what exactly are we carrying on? Are we carrying on jiu-jitsu, Gracie family jiu-jitsu in the sportive realm?
Yeah, I guess just wherever jiu-jitsu ends up, still having a Gracie there.
Well, I believe that we have to be ready to represent and carry on jiu-jitsu if somebody knocks on our door and wants to fight us, whether it be our academy or our home or just randomly in the street. But this idea of always being ready to compete in a tournament in the IBJJF, no, that's ridiculous. Matter of fact, that's almost, if I invested too much time in preparing my children, my students, and myself to always be ready in that realm, I would be moving further from the type of preparation that I really want to have.
Yeah.
Which is prepared for real life.
Well, let me tell you something. It is impressive that regardless of where jiu-jitsu has gone over the years, there is still Gracie family members competing at the absolute highest level in all of his forms. I mean, Clark, Kron, Hodger, you know, you name it, they're there, you know, and they're representing at the very top with, you know, no inability to be able to go ahead and effectuate their art, you know, at the highest level.
Yes, and they've made it their focus, and they've shown that they wanted, whether it's Abu Dhabi and Hajar, look what Hajar's done, so much good stuff and won so many events, and they've made it their focus, and all the power to them. It's amazing. It's good for us.
Yeah. Do you feel like that is important, or is just, you know?
Yeah, it's good, and it's just important that people understand that that's their focus, is to prepare themselves and possibly even teach their students to somewhat follow that path, and that the Gracie Academy's focus and some other schools might be different. It might not be at all about the sportive realm. So if people understand that there's different kinds of jiu-jitsu, then it's beautiful. If they confuse it and think that it's all one, then it's a little bit of a problem, because people who don't want to compete will, I guess, cancel, dismiss jiu-jitsu when watching competition, because what they really want is self-defense.
Yeah. And do you think that you'll always be, you know, at the Gracie Academy teaching? Is that where you see yourself in, you know, 20 years?
Yeah, I think I'll be teaching for sure in 20 years. I'll be teaching less. My hope is to, you know, teach 3 days a week and not 6 days a week. So if I teach 3 days a week, and that's not even so much to make money and to work, it's just to sweat and have fun and share ideas and escape my everyday life of, you know, bills and being a parent and a husband and so on. Just get out of the house. And the same way people go ride a skateboard or ride a bicycle, I'll just go roll for 2 hours and teach a little bit.
Man, I don't know how you're going to slow yourself down, because now you guys have so many programs. You got the Women's Empowered. You have children's bully-proof programs. You teach police officers, you know.
We do have many programs, but we also have many instructors. We do a really good job teaching people how to teach. So we have, you know, 150 plus certified instructors that teach our programs. And we have had so much, you know, positive feedback, because they follow everything exactly like how we tell them to do it. And people have walked into our building and said, hey, man, I was training in Arizona, in Scottsdale, Arizona. And the guy there, you know, you teach just like him, Chris. You teach like him, but he teaches like us, but they're feeling like this guy is like a mere image of us. And thanks to Gracie University, we're able to, you know, give them content and they teach it to their students, and then they ask us questions, and it's a back and forth process. And students in Scottsdale, Arizona, or in Minnesota, or in Florida, they're getting information from the source through their instructors in their cities.
And that teaching aspect, did you guys create that, or is this coming from your father and then came from your grandfather? Because I know that your grandfather took being a professor very seriously. I know that he, you know, and I think he came up with the format of the belt striping with, you know, earning your way to be a professor, which took usually like a couple of years in itself, right, after you became a black belt.
Yes. Well, his was white belt, blue belt, and dark blue belt. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, he was very passionate about having quality instructors. So we've learned so much from him and everybody before us on how to teach and how to pick a good teacher. But when it comes to starting this, we are responsible for Gracie University, but not for so many of the teaching tricks and methodologies. No, that's just been passed down to us. And obviously we are learning, like we're not so much learning judo techniques from Rhonda and karate techniques from Machida, but we are learning people techniques from whether it be books on how to deal with people and relationship books and how to teach people and how to convey the message better. So we're very open to different techniques.
So you guys have adapted
relations.
Yeah, you guys relationships. Have adapted yourself into the best way to communicate.
We love it. It's like a passion. And just in general, just studying the human mind and just people and how people think and how they, what they need and what they appreciate and what makes them sign up and what makes them feel comfortable. These are things that are very important to us.
Well, let me tell you something. We're about out of time, but it has been an absolute pleasure to be here with you, to discuss jiu-jitsu with you. I mean, very rarely would I ever get the opportunity to sit down with somebody like you and be able to just talk jiu-jitsu, you know? It's a beautiful thing. And I wish you all the success in the world. I want to congratulate you on your new addition coming in. It's been just an absolute pleasure, man.
Thank you so much. And if you want to talk more jiu-jitsu, just come to the academy.
Oh,
and
man.
We're there for you.
I will.
And we will not choke you out. We'll take care of you. We might choke you, but then we'll explain how we choked you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can. Yeah. You feel free to choke me out, you know, if there's a good lesson
with
in there.
With a positive mind, with a smile.
Yeah, but absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Heat on Gracie. If you want to learn Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, head over to the Gracie Academy in Torrance, or now you can go to Gracie University, which is, what is the website they need to head to?
GracieUniversity.com.
GracieUniversity.com. You will have Heat on Gracie. You will have Henner Gracie looking at you in your face over your computer, instructing you, giving you jiu-jitsu instruction from white belt to probably, where are you going now? Can you go all the way to black belt now?
We have not filmed that yet, but we're in the process.
It'll take you long enough. By the time you're ready for that, it'll be ready. So get
guaranteed.
On, yeah, get on Gracie University or just go down to Torrance and learn from these guys in person.
Thank
Heat
you
on,
so much.
Thank you so much for being here, man.
Thank you. It's great.
Drum technique.
You ready?
Drum technique. Drum technique.